This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, as we look back at the first half of a season that has most certainly had its ups and downs. We've had early leaders and those that have fallen away. We've seen form established and then go astray. We've had hiring, firing and retiring. And it's not even the new year yet. Add to that the unwelcome return of COVID just when things seem to be back to normal. And we could be in for another bumpy ride this winter. For now, though, let's take stock of where we are and bring you up to date with some of the things you might have missed over the past 5 months with the very best of the guests so far this season on the official EFL podcast. Back in August, Mick McCarthy was still in the hot seat at Cardiff City and his team were flying after a fantastic start that showed no signs of slowing down. Not one to get carried away though, Mick was keen to keep his feet on the ground and was halfway through cooking himself a meat and potato pie when we caught up with him for a chat in his kitchen, where he was able to demonstrate his new age domesticity and the culinary and conversational skills of a man at the top of his game.
It's been an unbeaten start to the season for Cardiff City, who early doors are nicely positioned in the Sky Bet Championship playoff places. And if I've got my maths right, I'm sure he'll tell me if I haven't. It's only three league defeats for the club since Mick McCarthy took over in mid-January. Although, before I ask you about that, I'm now bamboozled because in the preamble to us being able to speak to each other, you're currently manoeuvring the freezer and your oven, Mick. You're a picture of domesticity.
Oh, yeah. No, not the freezer. I've been in there. I went in there for my pie, but now I've been waiting for you guys. It might take less time to cook, you see, so I'm just a bit concerned about my cooking time.
Have you glazed it on top, or are you taking it as it sort of comes out of the packet and things?
Oh, as it comes, mate, as it comes. I'm not getting carried away with myself. You know? I'll never starve, but... Anyway, let's talk about some football, which I'm...
Why not? And I mentioned your numbers, and when we were sort of liaising to set this up, I sort of mentioned your figures since you took over, and you knew instantly exactly what your numbers were, wins, draws, defeats. So how accurate is your radar as to where you are now after a few games compared to what you thought it would be? Do you normally have a good feel when you got your promotions at Wolves, at Sunderland, of how a season was going to turn out?
Sat in my apartment in Cardiff, Clem. I'm sat in my apartment at Cardiff. You knew what I was going to say anyway, didn't you?
Yeah.
I'm not getting carried away. We're unbeaten. And I'm not going to be disrespectful to any of our opponents, because the Championship is a hell of a tough league. Every single game. And they've all been tough. But, you know, I've watched West Brom, and I've watched Bournemouth, and I've watched Fulham. Some good size. Birmingham have started really well. It's just a tough league. I'm not getting carried away with what we might do. I'd like to remain unbeaten. I'd like to win on Saturday and go into the international break unbeaten. So, other than that, Clem, not looking any further, mate.
I mean, is there a formula? Is there a Mick McCarthy formula? There are certain parts of it that have been with you throughout your now approaching 30 years as a manager, Mick.
I guess there is a formula. I've never sat down and worked it out.
Oh, wow.
I am, as you probably know, I haven't. I'm brutally honest with people, players, staff. Say it as it is. I guess I do it in a certain way, purposeful. I use purposeful now because I got told off for saying pragmatic by Tony Pulis. Because pragmatic seems to... It's kind of a dirty word that you're just not playing football or not doing it the way people want it to be done. So he said purposeful is a better word. But anyway, I'm still being pragmatic by using the word purposeful.
Yeah. If Tony's listening, he'll be texting you.
He will, mate. And I hope he does. Keeps in touch. It's nice. But that's the way it is. If you know me by now, Clem, I'm not going to open up, start be all hairy fairy and think we will do all this and we're going to be the best football team. It's not going to be the case, but we'll be one of the hardest teams to play against and one of the hardest teams to beat. And if you do beat us, you're going to have to work bloody hard and make sure you do.
If we're having this conversation again at the end of the season. And at that point, I'm assuming it'll be a slightly, well, it could be a pie again as we're in the summer now. If we're having this conversation.
Might be a custard pie for you, mate. You never know.
Well, I don't doubt it for a second. Where are you expecting the club to be? Have you got a feel for it? Do you know roughly where you think you're heading this season?
No, we've had a good start, and that's all it is. Where we end up, no idea. Injuries, suspensions, and you can suddenly find yourself in trouble.
Mick, it's been an absolute pleasure, and we got through the whole chat without mentioning the salmon pink away kit. I considered mentioning that first, but I look at the boys playing in that, and I think, really? Mick's manager of this team?
Clem, now I'm a grandfather. I have much more perspective on life and all-inclusive. Salmon pink kits, colourful boots, and about three of my players with headbands and stuff, so and ponytails. I'm cool now.
Well, let's hope your pie isn't gone. Pull it out of the oven. Lovely to talk to you. Thanks, mate.
See you, Clem. Ta-ra, mate. Lovely to speak to you. Bye-bye.
From the Pied Piper of purposeful pragmatism, Mick McCarthy, to the samba-fueled passion of the Potteries now, as September began with a joyful introduction to Port Vale's charismatic and inspirational Brazilian goalkeeper, Lucas Covelan. Against all the odds, Lucas has persevered to make a career out of the game he loves and bring a touch of the Copacabana to Burslem. However, it seems that, much to the surprise of many, myself included, the adjustment to the great British weather hasn't been as big a deal for Lucas as you might expect. If you don't want to live in a country that is sometimes grey, I don't know why you chose to come and live in England, because we have far too much of it.
I mean, south of Brazil can be really cold as well. So, Curitiba is not that far as England. I would say it's very, very grey and rainy. It could be snowy sometimes.
Stop it. I've got an image of Brazil in my head. You're spoiling it for me.
Don't do it. It's very different. Curitiba can be very cold. And then when they say about Brazil, they never think about Brazil being cold or having like snow. Just thinking about Copacabana and that's it, isn't it? Carnival.
And Lucas, do you also think of this?
That's my dad listening to those songs, not me.
Thanks for that. I deserve that, didn't I? I had to stop it quickly because producer Dave is panicking. He'll have to pay musical royalties, so I could only get away with 20 seconds, and then we'll be sending some money off to receive it or something like that.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
I promise you, I only do it to wind producer Dave up, if truth be told. And if he thinks that's the last time I'll be showcasing my South American vinyl collection on the official EFL podcast, then he is sorely mistaken. After 11 years at Vicarage Road, Troy Deeney made all the back page headlines as he secured a move back to his beloved Birmingham City just as the summer transfer window closed. Having spent a large part of his career there, leaving Watford was always going to be an emotional experience. But the opportunity to return home and play for the club that he and his family have supported all his life was understandably something he couldn't turn down. No doubt in the biggest EFL transfer of the summer 2021 window, after 11 years, 140 goals in 419 appearances and twice captaining them to championship promotion, Troy Deeney's time with Watford is over. But don't feel too sorry for him, because this weekend, 26 years after his dad took him to his first match at St Andrews, he's set to make his debut for his beloved Birmingham City. I feel like, Troy, I should be playing Adele's Hometown Glory or something under all of this. Are you getting similar vibes yourself?
It sounded really good, mate. I'm not going to lie. I couldn't have done that any better myself, so well done.
Thank you very much. Troy Deeney, good luck. It's been lovely to talk to you. No, I joke. How strong are the bonds, mate? I mean, this is the family's club, isn't it, that we're talking about?
Yeah, it is. In my whole family, I've got quite a big family, but there's only ever been two Villa fans. So one was my granddad, who's now passed away. He was a Graham Taylor fan more than a Villa fan. And my brother, who played for Villa from the age of 6 to 20. So he kind of was a fan by default. And every single one of us even the ones in Ireland and in Jamaica are all Birmingham City fans. So yeah, there's a lot of us, and the intensity's been definitely turned up. But I love it, as you know, mate. I like a bit of pressure. So this has been good fun.
Do you remember that first game that I alluded to? Do you remember going, how you felt as a 7-year-old through the streets? Everybody, I'm assuming, smoking a fag around that time, about on street corners and all.
No, we used to get the 97 bus from Chelmsley Wood, which was about 25p, 30p then. It's probably about £4 now. But it used to go straight away through, get off in town, go to a pub where my dad was, where kids were allowed to walk around pubs, and just make our way into town, into the ground, and kind of like three or four little stop-offs where dad would meet his mates, and then kind of all walked into the ground together, and it was great, mate. I can't tell you who we were playing, but the atmosphere, and I remember we won the game, and I remember when we left, just the joyous, like, occasion it was when everyone kind of fell out of the turnstiles. It was, people didn't want to go home, they were going to the pubs, they were going to different parties, and it was like, that was what I first got introduced to football, as if you win, look how happy everybody is. And that was kind of, you know, my introduction into Birmingham City.
Wow. Have you had a quiet moment in St Andrews? I ask this sometimes of, I remember when Chris Wilder went to Sheffield United to manage them, where you go back to where you used to be with your old man on the terraces and had a little look at that space, or just had a quiet moment to yourself to think, wow, finally I'm here, and think about that kid who first went to a match.
I haven't had that experience yet, but I've gone back there, and we did the promo video, and it was just strange, mate. I've never been in there when it's empty, you know, there's no cameras, there's no nothing, so it was nice. But I want it rocking. I want to hear my name being rung out properly. I want to hear, there's a thing that we do at Birmingham, which, as you know, that when a substitution changes, the fans give it the who, and it's really loud, it's really prominent. So I want to hear that. I want to hear that again, and that'll make me feel like I'm home then. So based on the social media response and the amount of people asking for tickets, I'm sure Friday will be, you know, a really monumental occasion. But that's all good unless we win. It doesn't matter.
Mate, all we can do is wish you luck. I love the story. I love the journey you've been on, but time for a new chapter, eh? Welcome home.
Thank you very much, mate. Appreciate it as always.
This is the official EFL podcast.
There's always something special about a homecoming story, and Troy Deeney's move back to St Andrews in the summer is a perfect example of a career coming full circle. And here's another. Charlie Austin spent three seasons at QPR between 2013 and 2016 before moving to the South Coast to play Premier League football with Southampton. Four seasons in St Mary's were followed by two at West Bromwich Albion before he was to feel the pull of Loftus Road, and a return to West London under Mark Warburton, first on loan last season, then making that move permanent in the summer when he signed a two-year deal, driven by a sense of feeling that it was the right thing to do. It feels like you and QPR are just the most perfect fit. Was last time around, and seems to be once again.
Yeah, it seems to be. I think both times now. When I first went there, the club wasn't in such transition, but they had such big name players. I don't know, the fans probably wanted someone that they could relate to, I guess. And because I had such good success getting promoted and then individual success in the Premier League, it kind of was a match made in heaven, shall we say. And then the second time, I needed their help and they needed mine. I mean that by I needed their help because a manager to give me game time, Clem, and they needed someone to come and help them out of the situation they was in. And very fortunate both fell into place.
Again, we had this conversation on Football Focus a couple of weeks ago, but I'm going to have it now. Your manager, Mark Warburton, said we weren't nasty enough, so I brought in Charlie Austin, which I took as a compliment on your behalf, Charlie.
Yeah, I think so did I, Clem, really. You have a reputation, nothing like that, but you have to be nasty sometimes. You have to be nasty within the rules of the game. You need to have the dark arts. You need to, and do you know what? You need to be told the truth every now and then. Sometimes the truth hurts. Not everyone can take it, but I think that's what I done when I first went in there to the football club. the second time around, was very honest with the lads and just said, listen, I need you to help me as much as I'm coming in to help you. But at the moment, you're underperforming and that's why you're in the situation you are. So as a team, not as a group of individuals, as I watched over the last 3 or 4 games, as a team, let's stick together and try and get out of it. And for our first 8 games, we'd won 7 and got beat to Derby at home 1-0. Although we were just had an off day then. And then we went on for the second half, the remainder of the season. I think we was third. Was it third over the second half of the season, I think? Enough, even if you look now, I think we've got 15 points. Like you said early on, we had a blip where we hadn't won in 3. And when I signed on the 8th of January, we had 21 points. Yeah. I've done my research.
Yeah, you have. And we should say as well that it feels like where QPR are this season is a culmination of the work that's been going on during Mark Warburton's time at the club, just over 2 years.
Yeah, I was going to say that, Clem. I think credit's got to go to the gaffer. Like I said to you when we did the interview a couple of weeks ago, I think he's been brilliant. He's been superb with me since the moment I come through the door, even to the first time I've spoken to him on the phone. And we have a great relationship. And I think all credit to him. And he's found a way to make us better as a squad and adapted with the players we've got. We play in a style 3-5-2 and we can change to a back 4 if we want, but he's got a style and a philosophy that he wants to stick to. And the lads have embraced that and we've gone on as a unit, not just 3 or 4 players, the whole squad and the whole club, I feel like, has changed. Since the turn of the year, I think the whole club's changed.
Tell me something, are you at the stage in your life where you reflect on the career you've had? Do you ever wonder what that kid carrying the hod up the ladder to...
Funny you say that. I think it was 13 years ago, it's mental. My wife put a Facebook status up or something, just saying, when I'd signed for Swindon or whatever. And that was, like I say, 13 years ago. And then you look back and just think, wow, that went so fast. That's just gone so fast. So for 13 years, when I first signed for Swindon, I went there as a naive 20-year-old, not knowing anything, to having 2 promotions, playing in the Premier League, etc., called up for your country. It's just gone so fast. Could I imagine what had happened? No. I don't think I'll reflect back on it until it's actually done, Claire, until I actually hang up the boots. I don't want to do that anytime soon, of course. But I don't think I'll appreciate what I've managed to, on a personal note, achieve until it's all over, I don't think.
Sunday, the 10th of October this year, was World Mental Health Day. And to shine a light on this most important of events, we were joined on the Officially AFL podcast by Chris Kirkland and Darren Eady, who share much more in common than being just 2 former Premier League players. Both continue to fight their own mental health battles that have seen them at their lowest ebbs, contemplating their very existence. Neither of them are out of the woods by any means, but agreed to share their stories and coping mechanisms during their darker times in the hope that it might provide some kind of comfort and support for those fighting their own demons on a daily basis.
Just got to the seesaw point where I knew I needed to do something or I wouldn't be here anymore.
I mean, I don't want to mawkishly rake over the embers, but just to clarify, I mean, it reached such a sort of peak on that pre-season tour with Bury that you're actually on a roof and contemplating your existence, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I should never have gone. I knew, but in a way, I'm glad I did now because it brought it all to a head. And, I'm glad I didn't want to go. I was petrified about going for a week and knew it was going to end bad. But thankfully, as I said, it was like a seesaw. You know, when I was standing there, it was a seesaw moment. I just felt my daughter and my wife pull me back off it and rang the owner straight away and flew home the next day. Told Dave that I had an issue back home. He was great.
This is Dave Flitcroft, the time.
They were great. Chris Sedgwick was there at the time and I got a bit of advice off him as well. So yeah, come back home and then sort of I told Dave what I was feeling. I was honest with him and he said, look, I've been through similar. He'd been through similar, so he knew where I was coming from. He said, take a bit of time. I did actually go back after about 10 days to try and give it another go because it's just that you know, you've done something all your career. You think, right, come on, you can still get through this. But then I ended up walking off the training pitch after about the second day. And that's when I said I need help. And that's when I rang the PFA. And that was when, you know, things started to get a lot easier and a lot better and a massive weight off my shoulders.
Yeah. I mean, Darren, again, I don't want to unnecessarily rake up the past and certainly don't want to open up all wounds, but can you just give us a little sort of flavour of your story, please, just so everybody knows how bad things got and how you've managed your way out of it?
Yeah, I mean, mine was a little, I think it crept up on me more than anything. I think when I was playing, in my playing days, you kind of need a little bit of anxiety and nervousness to perform, to get into games. So for me, it was about, I could harness that and use that to play football. When I came out of it, it was trying to, where do I sort of, you know, push those feelings and those emotions? And I had nowhere for them to go, and I was still feeling like it. I was waking up in the morning and I was feeling like I'm just about to go and play 90 minutes. I was anxious. I was nervous. And I couldn't understand those feelings behind it. And it just got slowly worse and worse because I didn't talk about it. I kind of shied away from things. I didn't go out. I couldn't even go to the local post office and look the postman in the eye. I just couldn't be around anybody. And that included my family. And I just had to kind of went very insular, shut myself away. And it got to the point where the tipping point for me was Gary Speed. And I was suffering really badly at the time. And I remember thinking about contemplating suicide and just kind of the whole feeling of it. And it got to a point where I saw what happened to Gary Speed. And that was the point to me, I went, I need to get some help because I don't feel like Gary Speed felt when he took his life right now, but I don't think I'm far off it. And if I felt, you know, he must have felt like I did at some point to get to the point he was then at where he took his life. So for me, that was the real kicker for me. But it all came from having to give up football. You know, I'd had 26 operations on my knee. I'd come back from 25 of them. You know, I always thought I was invincible. I'd come back and play again. But to wake up in a recovery room and have my wife and at the time the physio, the surgeon all in the room was really unusual. And it was a case of waking up and being told your career's over literally that day. And then the next day going into the training ground, still having treatment because they have to recover from that operation, but knowing I'm never going to play again, watching the lads train. It was just almost torturous. You know, it's been put in that environment where the thing you love doing most, and if all you've ever known, you can't do anymore. We can watch your mates doing it. And that for me was just soul destroying. And I think that drove me down and down and down. And when I came out of it, I didn't have the identity. So I didn't know what I was anymore. And I felt embarrassed to ask other people. You know, I did okay at school, didn't have many qualifications. But in terms of business, I thought, well, where can I go for work? What can I do? Because I don't have those transferable skills, or I thought I didn't. So you just shut yourself away. And I felt there was little sympathy for footballers. A classic, well, you're all right. You've played Premier League football. You know, you'll be fine. It's like, well, that's not the point. It really isn't the point. But I don't think you realise that until you're kind of experienced that yourself, I think. And that's, I think, you know, you ask anybody who's suffered and who is suffering. It doesn't matter who you are, what you are, how much you earn, where you live. It's got no bearing on your feelings. You know, they're exactly the same feelings for everybody, just different triggers.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
And it goes without saying, our thanks once again to Chris Kirkland and Darren Eady for bravely sharing their own personal experiences. And if you or anyone you know is currently struggling with their mental health, you can find advice and help at either the EFL's website or through the league's charity partner Mind via their website, mind.org. That's mind.org. October was also Black History Month, and to celebrate it, we're joined by a man who is quite simply an English football legend. Viv Anderson rightly occupies a place in the halls of fame at Nottingham Forest, Arsenal, Manchester United, and Sheffield Wednesday. And he's respected by football fans up and down the country. He's one of the true pioneers of the game. Viv became an idol for many black British footballers who looked up to him and used him as their inspiration. And he described to me what life was like in British football during the 1980s and the advice he received from the great Brian Clough.
Remember back in the day, I mean, my parents wouldn't go to Carlisle or Newcastle or anywhere up north. So they'd only come to home games where, you know, the atmosphere was good as long as you played well and you managed to win or, you know, put in a decent performance. So they would read reports about abuse that I might have took on a Saturday afternoon on a Sunday. But I can't remember my mum and dad sitting me down and saying, listen, you must do this, you must do that, you must do the other. Well, Dad was very quiet, didn't say quite a lot, but my mother was the focal point. And no, I can't remember anybody saying, do this, do that, the other, except the late, great Mr. Brian Clough that helped me through that period and that time.
Yeah. Opposition players, were you getting it from them as well?
Yeah, you'd get stuff like that. Yeah.
A fond memory. We played at Fulham when George Best, Rodney Marsh, they had all the fair players down there. And I always remember sleeping the night before, thinking to myself, I am not going to let George Best take the mickey out of me tomorrow. And I kept on thinking that. And so back in the day, you always try and get one on him early on, or get a tackle in early on. And I could never, ever get near him to get a tackle in. But I nail him about a minute before half time, and it must have been a riot, because I'm on the floor, George Best on the floor, and all these people saying, do you know who he is? And blah, 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 you back, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, no, I'm just trying to get a tackle in. I'm sorry, this, that, the other. So you speak to Laurie Cunningham, sadly he's not with us, and Cyril, and they used to get bullets in the post and, you know, hate mail and stuff like that. I don't know what it was about me. I mean, I didn't like wearing long sleeve shirts. I didn't like wearing gloves. But at my job, which Mr. Clough used to say to me on a regular basis, your job is to stop the winger from playing. Whatever it takes, you've got to stop the ball going in my net. So defenders never, I don't remember, I don't know, Brendan might say differently, but I don't remember getting much stick at all from the opposition.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Early on in this season, Sky Bet Championship, two frontrunners emerged in the form of Fulham, who were formerly managed by Scott Parker, and Bournemouth, who are currently managed by Scott Parker. They were to dominate the early chase for promotion. As someone who knows both clubs and both squads inside out, we caught up with Scott to find out his plans for the season ahead and how he intends to keep his current side ahead of the chasing pack.
As always, the main focus for me, like any team I have, is processes and understanding and sticking to them, really, and being very professional in our ways, coming in, wanting to develop. And I know if we do that, we'll be successful. So that's the main drive, really.
Yeah, but it's a long season for you too, and presumably you have to manage your energy level. So does that mean at home, for example, you might give yourself half a day to relax and enjoy? Because otherwise, staying in that zone for 42 weeks or whatever it is a heck of a long time. It would be exhausting.
Yeah, it is. It's relentless in what we do. And I think, you know, it's probably a question you should ask my wife, really, in terms of that. Because
do you want me to get her on the line, mate? Shall I do that and see what she says?
She'll probably say that I'll never stop in that sense. I'm always constantly, if even when I'm with her, there's times when I'm just looking up in blank spaces and thinking about the next day. And I think that's just the way it is. I think that's part and parcel
risky.
Of what
really
we do.
Risky,
yeah.
Mate. Really yeah. Risky, Scott.
Not exactly that. I think I spoke to you before. I think it's that, you know, for all of us, it's that fear of failure. It's that fear of not being successful or not winning games or not being right at it. So there's just a constant. And there's a constant there, what's going over in your head, just understanding, okay, we've got the afternoon off or a day off here, but as quickly as you are, before you know it, it's that Sunday night before Monday school starts again. And you've got your last few hours of the weekend, but you don't really enjoy them because all you're thinking about is getting into school the next day and if your own work's done, and before you know it, you're back amongst it. So, I suppose that's just part and parcel of what we do, really.
Who supports you? Are you quite well mentored? Have you got sort of experienced heads from your past that are there for a subjective ear occasionally?
I've got good staff around me. You know, very, very good staff. I'm fortunate enough that my staff have been with me now. And I've got, very honest guys who, you know, it's very open for them. I have someone who I speak to very, very often in Mike Griffiths, who's helped me as a player. I've been working with 15 years, really. So he's someone I bounce things off of, someone who's helped me early on in my career when I was probably struggling on a sports psychology side of things, has helped me and now is obviously still helping me on a daily basis, and then probably just supporting me, my wife and my family, really. So I think that's probably the most important ones. Okay.
Brilliant stuff. I tell you what, I've loved that chat, as I have done when we've talked previously in the past. I'll tell you what I'll do. If you guarantee to buy me a beer next time I'll see you, I'll clip the bits out about you staring into space when your missus is talking to you, okay? Is that fair? Otherwise, no, I'm just going to publish it in there. She'll get to hear it and you'll get absolute pelters next time you go home.
Count the beer on me, mate. So take them out.
Thanks, Scott. Lovely to talk to you. Pal. Keep up the great work.
Cheers, mate. See you in a bit, pal.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Yikes, I knew I should have listened to that final edit before this best of show went out. I do hope Scott and his wife are not listening. On to Ryan Lowe, now the former Plymouth Argyle manager who we spoke to at the beginning of November. Knowing Ryan as I do, I was keen to hear how ambitious he was, which he's since proved by securing a new role in the Sky Bet Championship with Preston North End. But at the time, he was happy plying his trade in the southwest and sampling some of the area's famous local delicacies. Are you ambitious, Ryan? Are you really, really ambitious?
Yeah, I'm ambitious, Glenn, but I'm realistic as well. I'm not, you know, I know that, you know, I always say you want to manage at the top, and I'm dead honest with you. I don't think many managers in the lower leagues will get an opportunity to go to the Premier League, however well they do. You know, I look at Dean Smith, I come from Walsall to Brentford to Aston Villa. You know, they're the type of, that he's the type of person I'd love to, you know, be, and, you know, well, not be, but I'd love to follow in his footsteps of where he come. And, you know, Chris Wilder's another one, League One to the Championship, to the Premier League. You know, I think, you know, this now, at this day and age, you know, there's a lot of foreign managers, which is fine, and there's some good ones out there, but I think the English pyramid of coaches and the pro licence and the A licences, I think there's a lot of coaches out there that have all got the same ambition. My ambition is just to be the best I can be in certain areas, and do, you know, there's some of my staff do better things than me, and that's just the way it is. But you've got to be ambitious, you know, whether that's to try and win leagues, get promotions, or to manage in a top flight. And I don't think I'm any different to many more.
Great to talk to you. I've got to offer you congratulations as well. How long is it since you hung your boots up? About three and a half years now. You're looking pretty good, mate. Especially as you're in Pastyland. Yeah. You could have gone to seed, mate, couldn't you?
Well, I have gone to see the little bit, me belly. I'm not going to lie, Clem, because we have a pasty every game, a ritual. It's a Devon ritual for Kevin Nansky, my first team coach. So we have a Ginster's pasty before every game.
After the game?
Did you say before? No, before. Only the staff, not the players.
Oh, I was about to say. We've just been talking about the sort of people around and stuff. Your fitness coach would be horrified if everybody's tucking into an extra large Cornish special before a game.
No, the players are certainly not allowed them, not even through the week, not even after the game. But the staff, it's a good ritual that we have to have them, yeah.
Yeah, just make sure they've cooled down a bit. Chop the end, because if you have one of those molten hot, it can do you in for the rest of the afternoon, can't it?
You keep the crust round the sides, because they were for the colas, weren't they? The miners, used to eat them. Did you know that story?
I only learned
that when I went down to Cornwall.
Well, of course you did, because it's too tempting to eat the crust as well, mate, isn't it?
Well, that is being greedy, eating the crust, isn't it? But no, they're actually a good make and a good pasty, Ginsters.
Very good commercial plug. Great to talk to you, mate.
Cheers, Clem. Thanks very much.
And very on brand, Ryan. And I'm sure the manufacturers of that particular brand of pasties will have been delighted with your endorsement. It was mid-November when we caught up with Glenn Murray to find out how retirement was treating him and to ask him whether there were any aspects of his former playing days that he missed. Now, listen, we're talking to you for the first time since on the 31st of May, you retired. 217 goals in 624 appearances across 19 years for 12 different clubs. With the statement that you would like to thank the fans, players and fans I've come across on this life-changing journey. So you're obviously acknowledging the incredible trajectory of your career from Workington lower non-league out to the States, then working your way up through. I mean, you got promoted, didn't you, from National League, League Two, League One and Championship over the course of your career. Well, not too many players will be able to say that. I haven't got that wrong, have I, Glenn? You did promotions from all of those.
Yeah, completed all those.
Amazing. So you already acknowledged it was life-changing, but having had a few months, what, have you reflected on it? Have you sat and stared into space and thought, goodness me, did that really happen? How have you spent your first few months?
It's been and gone, Clem. It's nice to look back, to reminisce. Sometimes you get a tweet from a club on this day and such, got a goal. But no, it's my sights are firmly set on the future. I don't want to spend too long dwelling on the past. What's done is done. And listen, it has been life changing. It was incredible. And I think that word trajectory, that's exactly what it was. It literally started from the bottom and almost ended at the top. And it was a slow rise throughout at every level, which I was doubted, gave me that hunger to continue, to drive on, to prove people wrong and ultimately end up scoring goals in the Premier League, where I always felt as though I could under the right regime.
What's been your favourite bit of retirement? What have you liked about it?
Tell you what I've liked about it most of all, Clem.
Go on.
Is not having an internal pressure of scoring goals.
That's really interesting. So it's the pressure you were putting on yourself and not having to have that inner dialogue saying, get your jacksy out of bed, get to that training ground, stroke 50 in shooting practice, go out and do it once or twice on a Saturday.
Yeah, it's just that, like, obviously I was mainly throughout my career the main striker at the club I played for. I was the focal point. I was the one that like I say, mostly throughout my career, I was looked upon to score goals for the team. And if I didn't do that, that would affect me. I would take that home with me. It wasn't a case of do your job and go home. I mean, and there's plenty of occasions I've missed penalties, I've missed sitters. And you walk in somewhere and somebody has a little bit of a go at you, like, oh, should have scored that, shouldn't have missed that penalty. And it plays on your mind, like, the last thing I wanted to do is miss that opportunity. Do you know what I mean? That was an opportunity I should have took. I know I should have took it. I don't need you rubbing my nose in it almost. So that even though I had all that external pressure from teammates and clubs and fans, it was the internal pressure I put on myself of my pride of doing my job and living up to that expectation that I do not miss one little bit.
What have you hated about retirement?
What have I hated about retirement? To be totally honest with you, not much. Not much at all. I think I probably, the thing I hated the most was late July, August. More July, the last 3 weeks in July and the first week of August, that's what I hated the most, because I'd had my time off and it was a new life, a new start for me, and I was nervous about how it would go. I was stepping into an industry that I wasn't sure about. For the first time in 20 years, I wasn't on a contract of security. I was out in the big wide world and I wasn't sure what I was going to do.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
It must be very strange when a long and highly successful playing career like Glenn Murray's comes to an end and you find yourself at a bit of a crossroads. I'm sure with his personality, knowledge, experience and media skills, he will be a regular across the airwaves for many years to come. And so long as he doesn't end up pinching any of my paid gigs, then I wish him all the best. Now to the extraordinary story of Sol Bamba, who just over a year ago was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma when he was at Cardiff City. We're all delighted he's so successfully come through his treatment and has since found himself a new club with Middlesbrough. But it has been an incredibly testing time for him and his family, as he explained to us last month.
My case, it was just on Christmas Eve we found out. And because he was such a big mass, they said it was 9 centimetres or something. So we needed to react quickly before he's played. So they said, like, listen, it's Christmas Eve, go and do Christmas Eve and Christmas. And we're going to look at, like, exactly what kind of chemo you need. And after, we jump on it straight away. So, you know, in a way, it was very good because I wanted to spend Christmas with the family and not worried about anything. But at the same time, like you said, I wanted to get going because I wanted to start the treatment. And but like you said, the consultant, the doctor, you know, every single one of them look after me. They were spot on, and I have to give them huge credit for what they did for me.
I mean, do you mind if I ask how frightened you were, how scared you were? You've got three children.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
no, I was, Clem, I'm not going to lie, of course, because, you know, you never know. And I think when he hit me, I remember, I think I said that a few times, is when my 9 years old asked me if I'm going to die. And I think because they're young, when they, you know, when they heard the word cancer, for them is straight away cancer, you're going to die. So when she said that to me, I didn't even know what to say. And that was hard. And I remember the next day I went to see the consultant, and he said to me, just be honest with them, because kids want the truth. And what you don't want to do is if something happened, you know, you don't want to be the one who lied to them. So, you know, the next day I spoke to all the kids and said, like, it's a possibility. Hopefully it won't happen, but it's a possibility. So, you know, I was scared. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm a big man, but I get scared sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, mate, just listening to you now and you know, thinking about all the things you've been through in your professional career, it's nothing compared to those moments that you've experienced there. How's it changed you as a person?
Massively, Clem, because I think, you know, I'm normally always a positive person, and I know, unfortunately, the job I'm doing. But I think when something like that hit you, you realise, like, you know, everything is a bonus, really. You try to enjoy as much as you can. You know, health is everything. I remember my mom always saying to me that from a young age, doesn't matter what you got or no money or whatever, you have to be healthy. And if you're healthy, you know, you should thank the Lord and appreciate it. And now I realize it even more, you know. So I try to pass that on to the kids, you know, to make sure you enjoy your life as much as you can. And hopefully they'll be, that experience will teach them as well, like life can be very short and you just have to enjoy it.
I mean, if I'd said to you a year ago now, and we're talking towards the end of November, how your next 12 months would pan out, I suspect you would have thought I was absolutely crazy, wouldn't you? Everything that you've gone through over that time.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, like we said earlier on, Clem, I think I had a vision. I won't say I knew I'd be in the situation I'm in now. That would be a lie. But I was convinced, and I tried to say to myself, like, I'll be back playing. I'll be in good health. And I'm glad that was the case. But I think what was important is mentally to have that sort of a mindset, you know, to make sure you can plan and look forward, even if back then it was very, very difficult to do. Especially when you got children, you know, my wife as well, she was very, very supportive as well. So, you know, it's very, very difficult, but I have to say it's beyond what I expected, because, you know, I'm back playing for a good club, they're looking after me, and, you know, I didn't expect that at all, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, obviously, you've upgraded your club as well over the last year to the greatest club in the history of the world, so that makes a little bit of difference. From the home of the Palmo, have you tried one yet? Have you tried one of the famous local delicacies?
No,
don't,
I haven't yet.
Don't. I want you to stay fit, okay? I want you to stay fit and make a big impression on the Middlesbrough team and on the division. Don't you dare eat a Palmo until the end of the season. What an absolute pleasure. Sol, you look magnificent, if I may say, not just because you're wearing red, but just physically, you look absolutely brilliant. Do you feel good?
I feel very good, but you definitely biased. You love the red on me. That's why you're so biased. It's crazy.
Let's just leave that hanging in there. Lovely to talk to you. Good luck for
the
rest of the season.
Thank you very much.
There has to be some perks of the job, Sol. What that man has overcome over the past 12 months is nothing short of remarkable. Now, to wrap up this Best of the Guest Part 1 of the official EFL podcast, a player who so far this season has been on fire in Sky Bet League One and whose 60-yard worldie against Fleetwood Town last month will be regarded as one of the EFL's greatest goals of all time. I recently caught up with Morecambe's Cole Stockton to find out how it feels to score a goal like that and how many times he's watched it back on YouTube. It was awesome. I mean, I can't imagine the feeling that runs through you when something like that happens. Because are they maybe a once-in-a-career moment, do you think, to be that accurate?
I think so, yeah. Just with the timing of the game as well. Like, 94th minute, I didn't have the legs to run the defender there, no chance. And I had nothing to lose. Do you know what I mean? Worst case scenario, it lands on the main road over the stand or a goal kick, whatever. But like, it's 1-1 at that point, and we would have took a point anyway at that time of the game. But to come up with that and then just see what it meant to everyone, all our staff and that all out the dugout, all the fans behind the goal as well. And like, as you've seen, the celebrations was incredible.
Do you know what? I'm in my little head, as you're describing, like you didn't have the legs to run or anything, I'm reminded, it's another Scouser actually, but he played decades ago. He's a player called Billy Ashcroft, played for Middlesbrough in the late 1970s. He ended up running the George Pub in Southport. Anyway, long story short, he was called the Bear of Bruges because he made his name at Wrexham and he had this giant, great, big hairstyle. Anyway, Borough signed him, but he was out of favour. So he got the weekend off and went to his mate's wedding just down the road. And then all of a sudden there was an injury crisis and he gets the call into the squad, gets put on the bench call. Half cut because he'd been to the wedding, then somebody gets injured, so he has to come on. He said he was all over the place. He was just, I don't know who the hell it was against. He said he was just inside the opposition's half and he thought, there's no way I'm running here. So he just lamped it. It was the worldie of all worldies, and that's what you describe in there, just reminded.
To be honest, I reckon I'm quicker half cut.
Do you think so?
I reckon I would be, you know, if you're ever trying to flag a taxi or anything, or, you know what I mean? And just, you get into fourth gear and open your legs, but so that'd be interesting. I'd like to see you.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Cole, who'd you play on Boxing Day? Because we could put it to the test, couldn't we?
Bolton away. I'll be risking nothing there. So.
Well, I mean, you know, let's just hope Stephen Robinson's not listening. And just between you and I and anybody that's listening to the official EFL podcast.
This is the official EFL podcast.
Producer Dave, can I play him a few more seconds? I can play you a few more seconds of music before you go. Hold on. Hold the line, everybody. Do you know what I've just realised, Lucas? I haven't got a clue what that man is singing. If I've picked a record of the Lord, it's not bad words.
No,
you've
bad
reassured
words.
Me. Phew, no dodgy language in there. That wouldn't have been very Christmassy, would it? That is it for this episode, and indeed for 2021. A huge thank you to all the guests who've joined us so far this season, and we're already looking forward to continuing in the same vein with the biggest names from the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two, when we return in 2022. If you've enjoyed this episode or the series so far, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on all of your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Thanks again for listening. Happy New Year. Join us again soon for another episode of
the official EFL podcast.